From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk social media. Buckle up, because we're looking at some of the most common language mistakes people make when they're posting, and some of this stuff will set your teeth on edge. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, and joining me as they do each week, language experts and New York Times best-selling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Well, hello, Kathy Petras, there at your home in Armenia. Hello, Ross, at your home in Toronto. We're sort of in the limbo stage between Thanksgiving and Christmas. My three-year-old daughter wanted to know why it wasn't Christmas already, because we kept telling her that Christmas comes after Thanksgiving. So she seemed a little upset that it wasn't Christmas yet. How are the two of you preparing for the next holiday?
Well, we're going to in-law's house, so we're looking forward to that because we don't have to cook and we don't have to entertain. And then we're going to spend the night in a place called Cambridge in Ontario, so we're all happy, and we're buying presents and getting a nice tree.
Lovely. Kathy, how about you? Do you get all festive?
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding? I mean, they go a little nuts. I mean, the Christmas lights are on in Granada proper. I don't think they're on in Armenia yet, so we always go look at that. We have a fake tree because Christmas trees are still not a thing here.
Oh.
So it's hard to get a real live tree. I mean, you could, but I think it would cost a lot of euros and it'd be a pain to get.
You guys don't have big, huge forests. We have huge forests up here. It's easy.
Yes, but you're in the great white north, Ross. Yeah. We're in arid Andalusia. Yeah. Okay.
It's funny though. I still feel sort of guilty about getting a live tree. It really, increasingly, it kind of like I feel, I mean, I know there are billions of trees up here, but still.
But they want to be decorated.
Well,
didn't you see all those shows as a kid? It's like, pick me.
Well, yeah. we got a live tree once in a pot, and it ended up like really suffering. It was like watching an animal slowly die or something because the dry house, whatever. Let's go on.
We're going back to our PETA's going to like complain again.
Today, we are talking about something that I think is going to be a lot of fun and probably horrifying, because we're talking about commonly confused words on social media, which is just a terrible place to be if you care at all about the English language.
Well, we got the idea. We got an email from Cheryl from Manitoba. She wrote, and I must say, I didn't notice this, nor did you, Ross. I don't think you did either.
No, I didn't. But then I found that wonderful thing. Go on, Kath.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to let you do the wonderful thing. I'll just read the email. She said, one of the consistent errors I am noticing on social media is folks using weary, W-E-A-R-Y, when they mean wary, W-A-R-Y, as in I would be wary of that, when warning someone off. Is it just me? And apparently, hearing Fletcher right then, it's not just you, Cheryl.
Yes, exactly. And I was thrilled. She's from Manitoba in Canada. And we looked up weary being used as wary and vice versa. And we found something from Canadian Wilderness Adventures.
Sorry,
and we're talking about bears. Try to minimize, they're giving you advice on being in the wilderness.
I'm sorry, Ross, you've got to read the headline. If you don't mind, it's five things to remember when viewing bears.
Okay, right.
Make sure you have your checklist and all of that.
Yes. And on the checklist, number two was be weary of a bear's critical space, just like humans with their personal space.
You guys, I am so tired of a bear's critical space.
Exactly. So I know. You're looking at a bear eating someone, one of your tent mates. You're like, oh, this is terrible.
Enough already.
<I know. laughs> This is boring. I know.
You know, this is something I've mentioned from time to time that I spend a little bit of time reading sports message boards. And if you really want to see people just absolutely burning down the English language, then you go to sports message boards. But also a lot of these errors that we end up talking about have appeared on sports message boards, you know, a decade earlier than whenever we talk about it. So this is something, this weary thing is something that I've seen for a very long time, and it's awful.
I had not noticed it until I read her email. I must say, it's one that has slipped through. Maybe I haven't. I don't know. It's odd to me that I have not found it, but I have not.
The weary and weary know. But remember, Kathy, you found that interesting article, and she had mentioned, we were discussing it, and it's linguistic capture errors. And basically, the argument really is this may be a bad case of it. This may be really not knowing. But a lot of times, and we've all done it, you know, you're typing and you're thinking in your head of a word, and then your mind drifts over and it goes into another word.
Goes into what you automatically spell normally.
Right.
Like I agree with you, Rose. I think that's an interesting article, but I don't think this is a case, because I don't type either wary or weary often. So I don't think I have the automatic muscle memory for that.
I think you're completely correct. On this one, I think that Canadian Wilderness Adventures didn't know the difference between weary and weary.
Get it together, Canadian Wilderness Adventures.
I just love the fact that it was the five things, because you're sitting there, there's the bear. No. Uh-oh, wait a minute, what was number three?
No, number two. Yeah.
Okay, now we have another email that we got, and this is just another of these examples. This is Lynn from New York. Hello, Lynn. Who said, okay, this is the second time I've seen this in 2 days. Neck in neck. Mm. All about the election, of course. So, uh-huh. Yeah, this was a few weeks ago. and then she said, she gave us one example, and it was the neck in neck presidential race. She said, I've seen it on Twitter. Oh, sorry, X, and other places. But this is very wrong, right? You know, are you seeing more of this too?
I mean, I guess I can see, of course, how someone might think it was mm-hmm. neck and neck, because when we're saying it out loud, we say it pretty quickly and we say neck and neck. But why would you think that was the right thing once you wrote it down? It sounds so creepy.
It does. And we looked it up, though, and we found it in Bloomberg. We found it all over the place.
No, really?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes, that was really interesting to us. And I think a long time ago, we had gone back to people, you know, remember we were talking about dull as ditch water, the original phrase was. And people transmogrified it into ditch water because ditch water was, you don't see ditch water anymore. That seemed reasonable. This one doesn't, because as you said, neck in neck doesn't make any sense when you look at it. But
no,
it's
I'm
there.
Looking at it right now and it looks ridiculous.
It does. But, you know, of course, it comes from old horse racing. And the other interesting thing that Kathy and I talked about, though, was nip and tuck.
Uh-huh.
Now, would you say nip and tuck? I would think nip and tuck only the modern way of, you know, surgery, cosmetic surgery. But it also is used in the sense of nip and tuck when they're not neck and neck. They're kind of like one guy is getting ahead, one horse is losing it, one horse is getting ahead again, that sort of thing. Would you use it that way, you guys, or not?
It was nip and tuck?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it.
I wouldn't say it. I would understand it, I think, if I saw it written in that context. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't really think it was strange. I would not say it. I don't remember the last time I ever said nip and tuck.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever said it, reasonably speaking. And I must say, if I saw it, I would think it was going to be in an older novel or something.
I don't know
that I've seen it used, other than, as you said, Ross, in the plastic surgery way.
Is that also a horse racing phrase? Does it come from horse racing?
They say that the nip and tuck was a close contest first used in the 1840s in a sporting race. And they think it might have come from a combination of rip and tuck and nip and tack.
That was it.
Neither of which I've ever heard in my life. So.
It was funny because I forgot that. I looked them up. I was trying to find rip and tuck, and I was trying to find nip and tack. I found one from 1836, quarter race in Kentucky. It will be like the old bitch and the rabbit, nip and tack, every jump. Now, I have no idea what that meant, but that's what they said.
Isn't this exactly the sort of thing? So let's just assume that rip and tuck and nip and tack both existed. So isn't this exactly the sort of thing that we're talking about, where after a while people started saying nip and tuck, and all the people who knew that it was mm-hmm. rip and tuck and nip and tack got really mad? Why are you conflating the two? It doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. And one of them would have been me in a former life, probably.
Yeah, on their 1830s radio show, they were screaming about it. You're right. Fletcher, what we're going to do now is we're going to give you a sound or the word, and we're going to ask you how to spell it. So we're going to do now, whoa, as in, whoa, I'm shaking. This is from the Gloria Stefani cries
Gwen
out.
Stefani.
Gwen Stefani cries out as she receives a video message. Okay, whoa, I'm
whoa.
Shaking. Okay, now spell whoa.
You know, I've seen a lot of complaining and fighting about whoa lately. Okay, so... I mean, like, first of all, I don't think it should really matter how you spell whoa, because it's one of those, it's just one of those sounds that we make. It's not even really a word. But whoa, I suppose maybe properly ought to be W-H-O-A. I don't see anything wrong personally with W-O-A-H. I think that's fine. But
well, I'm going to say, whoa,
I disagree.
Fletcher, you're right. Yes.
It looks like Noah, so then you go, whoa, to me, right?
I don't like whoa. I agree with you, Kat.
Whoa, if you will. Whoa, spelled that way. You're right. It's very contentious. I've seen a lot of people getting very, very nasty, actually,
yeah.
about it.
Yeah.
But they say that it's spelled that way is more popular in UK English than US English.
The WOA? The W-O-A-H?
Yeah, but it's still not standard. I mean, and in US English, always considered non-standard. I think, though, this one's going to change.
What is it? I don't understand. What does this even mean, standard? I mean, like, it's a sound we make. Like, it's like, huh.
But it's considered a word, though, Fletcher.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, and it's in the dictionary, and I mean, people consider it a word, and you're writing a book.
It's an interjection.
Yeah, it's an interjection, and you're writing a book, and you have to go, whoa, the horseman said to, me, to his
or,
horse.
Or, whoa-a.
Yeah. No, they have it here, intransitive verb, a command as to a draft animal. This is Merriam-Webster.
Okay.
Cease or slow a course of action. Interjection, it is a bona fide word.
It first entered, I love this, it first started being collected in the 1620s. It was a variation, though, of who, W-H-O.
They said it was a variant, though, of H-O initially.
Yeah.
And I think therefore, it was like ho, like
yeah.
that.
Yeah,
ho.
More like whoa.
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 Hey, we're great at horses and draft animals. I think we're all there for it.
Although, interestingly enough, it didn't start becoming really big as like, whoa, that's fabulous, until the 1980s.
Yeah, that was really interesting.
I would have thought that would have been around longer.
Yeah.
Whoa. I would have thought so too, but whoa, that's great. Yeah, no, I think it is.
Whoa,
dude. Stop. Is it something like that? I mean, like Bill and Ted, you know, they said whoa.
Yeah,
right?
Whoa.
And then I think Joey Lawrence's character on Blossom was famous for saying whoa.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, that's right.
Right.
Well, Fletcher, you're really an expert
on this. I know. I'm an expert on whoa. So yeah. take my advice and spell it however you want.
And remember, now, the OED had different spellings for whoa, meaning stop. It started with W-H-O, then it was W-O, W-O-A, and they do have W-O-A-H.
Yes.
In there in the 1850s.
But there was only one example of that.
Oh.
So it could have been a bad speller. There are a lot of bad spellers in the world. I'm one of them. So someone could have done that in 1856 and been wrong.
Whoa. It's fascinated by whoa.
Yeah, I think the W-H-O-A is way more common. And I mean, I guess it turns out if you are susceptible to bullying and you don't want people yelling at you, then maybe that's how you should spell it.
Actually, I agree with you. I mean, it's whoa. I mean, so calm down. I agree with you. It's just everybody should just relax. Like, whoa. Like that chill. Whoa. Yeah.
Oh, you guys are so cute talking about this.
Oh, yeah?
Aw.
Aw.
Segue.
Aw.
How do you spell aw?
Well, how cute do I think it is? Aw. Wait, and also, am I saying aw or am I saying aw? Am I disappointed by something, or do I think something's really cute?
Well, we're going to be right now, Fletcher, very technical, and we're going to talk about the dictionary. The dictionary has one type only, the Merriam-Webster dictionary. We're going to be that way, the interjection.
Oh, okay.
No, but you have to explain what it is, like mild disappointment.
Oh.
It's not the cute one. We're not going to do the cute one first, right, Ross?
This is, I've just added another layer to this now. Am I saying another word after I say awe, or am I just expressing disappointment with that interjection, awe?
Basically just disappointment, or it could be fake sympathy.
Well, okay.
I don't, Russ, you're making it too complicated. I think we should just say it's mild disappointment.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing. It is getting complicated.
Kathy, wait. I'm going to fight back here. I'm going to go with the definition of Merriam-Webster that Fletcher can parse this out.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Used to express mild disappointment, gentle entreaty, or real or mock sympathy or sentiment. I was trying to do mock sentiment, but I see what Kathy is saying, but let's stick with all of those.
Okay, but because there's the other one we have to do then, too.
There is. We will do that.
There are many more layers to awe than I even thought before we started this conversation. But, okay, so here's the thing. If I'm expressing mild disappointment and I'm using another word after awe, as in aw heck, then I'm just going to spell it A-W. Aw heck. But if I'm just saying aw, as in I'm kind of disappointed, I would probably spell that A-W-W.
Me too. Okay. Yes. Well, I also think you do the A-W-W when you're saying something's cute. You go,
yes.
Aw, that's adorable.
That's the other thing.
I said that, yeah.
And if it's cute, I say A-W-W. If it's really cute, I probably say A-W-W-W-W-W. See, there's a lot going on here with this aw.
Actually, it's funny. You don't realize how multi-layered, as you just said, aw is.
But I hate to be a pain here, but I just looked up aw as an aw shucks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what would that be?
A-W.
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 Yes, because there's a word.
Good.
There's a word after the aw.
Right.
Okay. That's good. I like that.
Aw heck, aw shucks. All... But if it's, if I'm just saying aw, then it's A-W-W.
And if yes, and then if you're just going like, oh, I really wish I had done that, oh, you know. But if you're saying, oh my God, that's the cutest baby I ever saw, you go, oh.
Yeah.
Shucks apparently, I looked that up.
Uh-huh.
Shucks apparently is one of those euphemisms like darn for damn. Mm-hmm. Shucks uh-huh. Shucks comes for another word that we probably can't say on air.
Oh, I never thought of that.
Oh, interesting.
It's interesting, though, because in the dictionary, there is no aw, even though I think clearly
there's
that's
no
a word.
There's no WW, extra W's.
I looked up AWW in Merriam-Webster, and they only have AW.
Okay.
Oxford AWW. Learner's Dictionaries has AWW as an exclamation, used to express approval of something particularly attractive and pleasant. Aw, look how cute that lamb is.
Mm-hmm.
That's an example.
Mm-hmm. I need some advice on that.
But wait a second, though. We have to say, I'm sorry, Russ, I'm cutting you off for a moment. We're getting on and on about the aw that way. The reason this is in here is how many people spell it A-W-E.
No.
Yes.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You've seen that, Ross, right?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, people go, aw, that's cute. A-W-E, comma, that's cute.
Oh, wow.
On social media.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know if I've seen that. That surprises me because that's kind of the more complicated spelling of it.
That's an interesting point, but I think they've learned aw is, you know, in school or whatever is spelled aw.
I think so, yeah.
I mean, it has to be. I'm just surprised, I guess.
Aw isn't just A-W. The OED has it first published in Harriet Beecher Stowe. I'm just fascinated. Aw is really a complicated word. I'm just looking. They say that it's like it's in multiple cultures, aw.
Hmm.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
People say aw, like it's like mother, where ma, you know, the M sound is for mom, mama, or whatever. Aw is like innate, I mean, sort of like instinctive for us to mm-hmm. say. That's interesting.
Now, Ross, you were asking if you wanted some, what?
Yes, Fletcher, we need some advice. How do you spell that? But this we've seen everywhere.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
I mean, I think I can guess. What the problem is here, but I haven't seen it. I mean, advice, A-D-V-I-C-E?
Yes. Kathy found a great one. Need some advice, A-D-V-I-S-E, for preparing for soggy bottom hunt in Ohio. Whatever that was about.
I don't really want to know. Oh, yes. Yeah. I don't really
care.
It's
about archery. It's about archery. I guess you're hunting things in a soggy bottom. But A-D-V-I-S-E is extremely common.
See, I have
advice.
I don't know that I've seen that much at all. I certainly don't remember it. I'm Wow.
I see it all the time. I saw something recently, and it was actually kind of one of those ironic moments. It was in a writer's group, and someone said, can you give me some advice, A-D-V-I-S-E, on finding a good copy editor for me to hire? And it was like,
well, I think, well, yeah, here
let's,
we go.
Let's start right here, honey.
It's interesting, though, in how it works in language. Early modern English tends to alternate. The C-E ending is usually for like the noun, and the S-E ending is for the verb.
Yeah.
So advise, advice, devise, device, etc.
I guess I can see why it would cause people problems. The thing is, I think the word advice is a much more common word than advise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. You see the noun more often.
Yeah, so I'm surprised that people are misspelling the noun.
Yeah, because that's interesting, Fletcher, because, Kath, have you noticed people saying they're advising you to do something?
Advising?
No.
See as a verb? I don't
no,
see that.
No, I don't. I usually see it the opposite way. I see it like using the verb for the noun. I want some advice, but they spell it advise. Huh. I want some advice about this. Yeah. I see that much more often.
And now that you say it out loud, I am surprised people aren't screwing it up the other way around. Doesn't it seem like people would be verbing the noun?
Yeah, it would to me too.
Please advise me.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we're talking, I really didn't think about it, but absolutely. And I have not noticed that much. I always, not always, but I would say 99.9% of the time, I see it the other way. I need advise. This is making me lose my mind. How do you spell that? We're losing our minds. Ugh.
Okay, look, I just now thought of it. This isn't something I've thought about before, but I can make a case for the incorrect version of this in that specific phrase, lose my mind. However, okay, so obviously we should be spelling lose, L-O-S-E, not L-O-O-S-E. We're not loosing our minds, right?
Correct. Yes. Everybody seems to have minds that are being loosed as opposed to being lost.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, I see loose standing in for lose in lots of different places, not just with the phrase lose my mind.
Loosing the battle.
Yeah.
Loosing your, you know, whatever. I see it all over the place.
I can make a case for loose my mind because, you know, right, you're holding your mind in place, but if you loose it, if you let it go looser, then it's getting
Fletcher.
Crazy, right?
I think that someone's stretching a little here.
Yeah, well, I'm loosing my mind a little bit.
I'm tightening my mind.
But I mean, given that I see it all over the place, just to mean lose, you know, I mean, like even. I think we're going to lose the game, you know. I mean, I see it there too. So
definitely.
So obviously people are just screwing it up.
They come from the same, I'm just looking, they do come from the same root, from the PIE, from Proto-Indo-European, to mean to loosen, divide, or cut apart. So they, in fairness.
Yeah, I know that people are definitely often going back to the Proto-Indo-European when they.
They always do it, yeah. People just read too much Proto-Indo-European etymology.
I tell you,
for all intents and purposes, Fletcher.
Yeah.
For all intents and purposes, that's a good assignment to study.
Well, okay, I won't bother spelling it all out. Obviously, it should be all intents and purposes rather than intensive purposes.
Mm. Very good.
I'm surprised that we still see it so often because I thought there's been so many articles or we wrote about it and you're saying it wrong, actually,
yeah, we did.
The book. You would think that people would, at this point, have figured it out, but no, it's still in. But is it, you don't think of an intensive purpose?
It means nothing. Intensive purposes doesn't really mean anything much.
Well, I never cared for it myself. Yeah, because it's like cliche-y. But I mean, when you think about it, though, you could say it's an intensive purpose. It's like
a
really vigorous purpose.
Yeah,
you know? It's like quite a purpose. Now,
It was interesting. We did a little thing on that. It came from under King Henry VIII in 1547, the original term, and it was legal. You can see it has like a sort of a legal phrasing to it. And the original phrasing was to all intents, constructions, and purposes. Hmm. And then constructions dropped out, and then they substituted four for two. I don't think it's a particularly useful phrase anyway, really. It's sort of junky to me.
Yeah, I don't care for it.
You know, Kathy, since you said it was like a cliche, I wonder if that's part of why people started saying intensive purposes. Like, you hear intents and purposes so many times that the phrase kind of loses meaning. And so people just hear it as a jumble of sounds instead of the actual words. And so after a while, it starts to mush together into something like intensive, which is a word that people know.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Oh, I think that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And now, is this a moot point? Can you spell that?
Yeah, M-O-O-T. Do people spell it mute? M-U-T-E?
Everywhere. Oh, really? Everywhere.
Yeah.
I love this. This is another email from another New Yorker. Kenneth sent this in. He just wanted us to see it. He didn't have a comment. It was somebody on CNBC. Somebody put it up on Instagram on some reel. And it says, whether he believes in Bitcoin or not is almost a mute point.
We've talked about moot, M-O-O-T, before. I mean, right now it means that, you know, it's academic, right? It's not even
right.
Can you tell me about the word, like how it developed? Because I remember it not exactly meaning the way we use it now.
No, it began in the 12th century in England. And it, basically a moot was a judicial or legislative meeting. Basically, the discussion was at a moot. You'd have a talk about something at a moot, which meant basically it's debatable, open to argument. You can talk about it. What is this idea? Is this good or bad? Then it merged into something mean like you're going to debate it, but it's not worth talking about at all. And that's when it got to the current.
Right.
And that's where Kathy discovered this years ago. And she constantly will go, I mean, I'll go the current meaning. I go, that's just moot. And Kathy go, well, I mean, if you're using the
technically,
meaning,
it's moot. Technically,
or she'll go, or we'll be talking, and she'll go, well, that's really moot, using it in the early meaning, not the later meaning.
Like it's debatable instead of it's not worth debating.
Yeah. I'm so actually like very screaming. Irritating about this one, I must admit.
Now, I
can't help it.
I hate mute point, but again, as you probably can as well, I can make a case for it. Right? It's not a point worth talking about, therefore it's on mute. It's
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I get it. I don't like it, but I get why people do it.
I'm just wondering though, is that one like one of those things we earlier talked about though? You type it and moot is like an unusual word and you sort of like transmogrify it into
I don't think it's a typo, like weary and wear. I think you're right in that people don't know the word moot and they do know the word mute. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if all of you have ever done is heard moot point, I mean, certainly you've read and heard mute a million times, then I can see why people would misspell it, M-U-T-E.
Mm. Yeah.
Because that's the word you know, and this other word is only used in this context. We don't talk about anything else being moot.
No, unless you're Kathy.
Well,
I use it a lot.
You do. I have to say, I've never met anyone use the word moot more than you.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetrus@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.